It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. And I'd like you to think of all the things you own. So many of them need electricity these days, which used to be pretty easy to quantify. That light in the hallway, it's a 60-watt incandescent bulb, so it uses 60 watts an hour. Maybe you now have an LED bulb in there. That uses around 10. Your washing machine, that needs around 1,500 watts per hour. And now, what about your phone? Well, a dead iPhone battery needs about 3 hours to fully charge, usually at around 5 watts an hour. Once that phone is charged, though, its energy use starts to multiply. Take an email, for example. There's the router that's connecting it to the internet, the energy needed to write, send, and store the message on your device, and the cloud, both for you and the person on the receiving end. And now, what if you added AI into the mix? Let's say you use ChatGPT to help you craft that email. It's really hard to quantify exactly how much energy a single query on ChatGPT uses, never mind how much was used to train that AI model to begin with.
Yeah, the thing is that the current way we train these models is I call it brute force.
This is Sasha Lucioni. She's an AI researcher.
Like terabytes of data, essentially, from the internet, from books, from Wikipedia, what have you. And so this process, especially for specifically large language models, so billions of parameters, can take months.
Sasha has become obsessed with trying to figure out just how much energy AI uses. It is a complicated endeavor, but we know it's significant. Take, for example, one early estimate by researchers.
So it all started, I think, in 2019 or so. A first paper came out that estimated that training a large language model like ChatGPT emits as much carbon as 5 cars in their lifetime. So that's like the manufacturing of the cars and like the usage of the cars. And that's a lot.
By one more recent estimate, training one of these models, like ChatGPT-3, took as much energy as 130 American homes in 1 year. And yet, climate scientists believe technology is crucial to helping find solutions to our climate crisis. But what can we do when technology itself is a problem for our planet? Today on the show, tech's climate conundrum. Ideas about how AI, electric cars, and satellite monitoring will help us reduce emissions, and how we can confront their environmental downsides, too. So, back to Sasha Lucioni. As AI gets embedded into everything we do, she says tech companies are more and more reluctant to be upfront about how much energy their products use, something I discovered for myself. I asked ChatGPT how much energy it costs to query it. And do you mind if I read you the answer
ahead.
It gave me? It says, as an AI language model developed by OpenAI, I don't have direct access to information regarding my power consumption. OpenAI strives to optimize its infrastructure for efficiency and sustainability, but precise energy consumption figures would depend on various factors like server load, optimization techniques, and data center efficiency, among others. So, no, I don't have a specific answer to your question.
I mean, all of that is true.
But that's really frustrating.
But that doesn't answer your question.
No, it doesn't. And it's saying, I find it strange that the AI is telling me that its maker won't share any of the information. Is that what it's saying, basically?
Yeah. It's kind of like what I've noticed a lot lately in the conversation about, you know, sustainability, environmental impact. It's like, once you start gathering the information, you have less plausible deniability. And so it's like, well, we don't have the information.
So they don't
it's really
know.
Complicated. So, you know, we haven't gone through the actions necessary to gather that information, right? And I've heard this answer coming up a lot. Well, AI is so complicated. We don't really have that information. Like, because AI is so distributed and complex. And so it's really even hard to, like, pin down. Do you include, I don't know, Internet of Things? Do you include smartphones? Do you include, like, right? Like, there's all these different. So it's like, well, I mean, no, we don't have the answer.
So to try and better estimate how much some AI use, she and other researchers built their own large language model. They called it Bloom.
Last year, I was part of the Big Science Initiative, which brought together 1,000 researchers from all over the world to create Bloom.
Sasha Lucioni continues from the TED stage.
The first open large language model, like ChatGPT, but with an emphasis on ethics, transparency, and consent. And the study I led that looked at Bloom's environmental impacts found that just training it used as much energy as 30 homes in a whole year and emitted 25 tons of carbon dioxide, just so somebody can use this model to tell a knock-knock joke. And this might seem not seem like a lot, but other similar large language models like GPT-3 emit 20 times more carbon. But the thing is, tech companies aren't measuring this stuff. They're not disclosing it. And so this is probably only the tip of the iceberg, even if it is a melting one. And in recent years, we've seen AI models balloon in size because the current trend in AI is bigger is better. But please don't get me started on why that's the case. In any case, we've seen large language models in particular grow 2,000 times in size over the last 5 years. And of course, their environmental costs are rising as well. The most recent work I led found that switching out a smaller, more efficient model for a larger language model emits 14 times more carbon for the same task. And as we're putting in these models into cell phones and search engines and smart fridges and speakers, the environmental costs are really piling up quickly.
Recently, I was giving a talk and someone came up to me and they're like, yeah, we noticed that now that we're switching to like local AI solutions, like our energy usage is going up. And I was like, yeah, funny how that happens. And they're like, well, and the thing is, like, when we talk about AI or when we hear AI being discussed, it's often this like ephemeral thing that people are just, you know, they're like, oh, AI can read, AI can write, AI can make images. And so people don't tend to have a very physical concept linked to AI, but it actually does run on a computer. It's very physical.
To help companies who train or just use AI models, Sasha built a tool that estimates how much carbon they're emitting. It's called Code Carbon.
I helped create Code Carbon, a tool that runs in parallel to AI training code that estimates the amount of energy it consumes and the amount of carbon it emits. And using a tool like this can help us make informed choices, like choosing one model over the other because it's more sustainable, or deploying AI models on renewable energy, which can drastically reduce their emissions.
So for example, you know, if I'm training a large language model on 1,000 GPUs that are all in Texas, versus 1,000 GPUs that are all in Montreal, which has hydroelectricity, it's going to be the same amount of energy, but a hugely different amount of emissions just because the energy is generated differently. And so we want to help give people that extra information. And so Code Carbon is used by lots of developers. It's become kind of one of the de facto standards for like reporting energy. We recently got a Mozilla Foundation grant for it. We're trying to essentially build it out and give it more functionalities and make it a little bit more user-friendly.
So if I'm the CEO of a company, I can use your tool to figure out which AI to use more efficiently, to be more sustainable. But what if I'm just like a regular person? Let's say I am using AI too, but I want to choose the least carbon-emitting AI. Is there a tool for me?
I'm really a bit of a dreamer, but I think that if people are presented with information, I mean, they'll make choices that are kind of coherent with what they care about, what their values are. And so I'm working on an Energy Star rating for AI models. So essentially, similarly to appliances or all sorts of, you know, even vehicles, they have these ratings that say, well, essentially, like, this is how it compares to other models. And so I want to do that for AI models for different tasks without going into too many details, but having like an A+ to an F or to a D rating. Essentially so that people, when they're picking a model and they're like, okay, I want to do, for example, image generation, they kind of know, at least like at a high level, how the different models measure up.
Can we talk about what drew you to AI to begin with? The good parts of AI, the problem solving it can do. Do you have a favorite example of AI being used efficiently to help the environment?
Yeah, I mean, essentially AI actually is not a single technology as well. It's got a lot of underlying approaches. And so maybe people know most, you know, generative AI like ChatGPT, but there's actually all sorts of what's called unsupervised learning. So there's a really cool startup in on the West Coast called Rainforest Connection, which is using a similar technique for detecting illegal logging and deforestation in the Amazon. Mm-hmm. And essentially, they have these very, very lightweight AI models that are running on old cell phones, actually, with solar panels. So they're like very, very green. And they listen to the jungle, and essentially they know what constitutes rain and, you know, parrots and monkeys and whatnot. And then if they hear a chainsaw or a truck or even human voices, they can flag that as an anomaly. And then they partnered up with like rangers in different countries to send people to check if like if there's deforestation happening. And I find that really cool because on one hand, it's very low tech. And on the other hand, it is in partnership with, you know, rangers who are already doing this work. They're already trying to stop illegal deforestation in the Amazon, and it's helping them, you know, target specific areas better.
That sounds amazing. But let's say I'm at home thinking about these new tools, and I, as a person, just want to do right by the planet. Is the bottom line that I should think twice before I use AI unnecessarily?
I'm totally I'm totally agree with that. Like the only usage I found for ChatGPT, and once again, like I'm trying not to be radical here, is once I write a scientific article or, you know, a paper or something, I take the abstract, like the resume, and I put it into ChatGPT to get it to come up with like funny titles, because I'm typically really bad at that. And it can come up with really some really good ones, and then like some puns or some like word plays or whatever. And then I'll tend to like put a bunch of them together and make something that I like. And so that's like my only go-to usage of generative AI. Like tech is so pervasive in our lives. Like we shouldn't necessarily try to beat ourselves up about it. But, you know, trying to kind of stay critical, like, you know, this thing that's being sold to me, do I really need it? It's like before, you know, I'm going to use whatever ChatGPT as a calculator, think about the options that maybe isn't AI, but that does the task that I'm trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, in France, there's this concept of digital frugality that I really like, or digital sobriety. And I find that it's really interesting because they're really thinking about, like, do we need this tech? Does this thing have to be connected? Does this have to be a smart device? Mm. And I think that might help if we did it in other places too.
That's AI researcher Sasha Lucioni. You can see her full talk at TED.com. Today on the show, Tech's Climate Conundrum. It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and we'll be right back.